Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za. Kaya Talk.
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Well, thank you very much for making time for us. So Dr. Tlaleng Mofokeng, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights to Health, briefed the media yesterday on some of the findings that they've had to report on with regards to what's happening in the Gaza Strip. She's on the line with us. Thank you very much, Dr. Tlaleng, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pimelo.
Well, you know, your briefing yesterday, I think, was quite strong and I got myself when I was listening and watching, got quite emotional, because one forgets, you know, we've been watching all of this play out in real time in front of us. And the concern, obviously, is whether the public, the world, has become numb to what we're watching. And when you start engaging with the numbers and the reality on the ground, is a very different story. Tell us how the work that you've been doing has affected, you know, how you see it, especially from a South African who has a history as a child of apartheid South Africa, how this connects to you as well with your work.
Thank you. You know, when I took over this mandate in August of 2020, I articulated to the General Assembly and the Human Rights Council that I would be embarking on an anti-colonial and an anti-racist frameworks and analysis on the right to health, to understand why the right to health for millions of people around the world is not realized, contextualizing and problematizing that particular history of coloniality and racism, and making a point that it's still living with us today. And so with this current escalation of this episode in Gaza, we see how an illegal occupation, because of imperialism, enabled by, you know, Israel and their own allies in Europe and as well as America, further puts the right to health under attack in a way that we've never seen before. And people often think that, you know, human rights are these abstract ideas or ideals in an utopian world. But you see directly the consequences of ignoring human rights, but having a disdain for human rights, but also dehumanizing an entire population of people to a point where the Gaza Strip itself could be an enclave that could be destructed in the manner that it has. And so for me, I carry those memories of being a child who grew up in Gwagwa, in a Bantustan, in a brutal apartheid regime. And I bring that lived experience with me through my work. And so this has been a very visceral, very traumatic witnessing of accounts in Gaza. But I think that's where my commitment also comes from, the knowledge that it can change. And it doesn't have to be this way.
One of the difficulties with moving forward with your work and others, other aid workers and agencies, is the lack of access, right? So being able to track the data properly, because it's very difficult to get access to the area, being able to track properly what is required, even though we know what's required, but being accurate in accounting for what is happening is quite difficult. Just explain that difficulty for us and what it actually means.
The difficulty in accessing information in Gaza and the occupied Palestinian territory is also intentional, and it's a deliberate act as well that forms part of the genocidal acts that Israel is committing. For there to be accountability and justice in the end, we need witness accounts. We need to be able to have access to investigate independently with expertise what has been going on. And so by restricting humanitarian aid, by restricting and targeting journalists, by the way, it is a form of silencing. It is a form of erasing the evidence that would be so crucial to prove what we already know is unfolding in Gaza, which is a genocide. On the one hand, you know, you have what we have, a genocide in real time, documented by its own victims. And on the other hand, you have world leaders who are self-imposed passiveness and a lack of leadership. It's a disaster, because you have faith in the multilateral system that someone, somewhere, there is some things, there's some safeguard that can prevent this to happen. And so when you see it keep happening, you are stuck in complete disbelief on the one time, and having to respond, of course, in my role as a special rapporteur, one oscillates between complete rage and fury at the level of impunity that's happening. But we need to understand, even the targeted killing of doctors and healthcare workers is, again, that there will be no experts to provide that evidence, even in a criminal court of justice, even in the International Court of Justice, if things go that way. So it is part of the agenda that there must be no evidence and there must be no truth tellers left to tell of this massacre and of this horror.
Access to health, we speak of it very broadly, but we've gotten to a space now where we have to now allow passage, right, you know, passage for those who really need access to health in other spaces, for them to get health, health care from neighboring countries and so on. Even that is not something that is going smoothly. You are speaking of what percentages of what, 40%, almost 50%, under 50% approval rate for evacuations. I mean, what then becomes of those who remain?
And this is the context, I think, that's very important for us to also understand that, you know, everyone keeps saying we need a ceasefire or humanitarian pause so we can go back to October 6th. But my argument is, even on October 6th, Gaza was not a natural geographical unit of existence. It was already a space engineered in the form of apartheid to enable the very genocide we see. My own mandate, me personally, have been engaging with the Israeli government for years now, appealing to them to allow children to get specialist pediatric treatment, to allow women to get specialist gynecological treatment, oncology for cancer patients. So this idea of medical evacuations is not only peculiar now because of this escalation. The Israeli government has always controlled the movement of Palestinian people, including even when they needed medical care, to a point where we have to appeal sometimes that they allow a child to be accompanied by at least one adult who's their caregiver. And so it's not surprising that in this time of this crisis, the evacuation rate is as low as it is, because, again, the other neighboring countries themselves are overwhelmed with casualties, right? The internally displaced people are about 1.7 million. The people with injuries are even more than the people we are counting with deaths. So you can imagine the state of complexity, but the urgency of having a medical health system that's functioning. But by attacking directly health infrastructure, Israel government is ensuring that the right to health is not realized, that even those people with injuries that could have otherwise been resolved and they could have recovered actually succumb to those injuries. And the prevention element of genocide speaks directly to that. Not only should we be treating people when they get sick, we have an obligation, and Israel as an occupying power has an obligation under the right to health to ensure that Palestinians' rights to health are realized. And right now, not only are they doing that, they are completely disseminating the health infrastructure to respond to any form of crisis, let alone war and military arsenal.
You say you've been engaging with member states, and in particular this time around we're speaking now about Israel on many issues even before October 7th. Have they responded since October 7th at least?
No, I mean, I think that the coercive nature of how they behave is not you know, exempted for particular members of society. They evade accountability at all levels, regardless of who you are. They ignore the Security Council. They ignore the International Court of Justice. They ignore the General Assembly. They ignore the Human Rights Council. That is the nature of how they are, and it's been enabled by the United States and their European allies, who have political power to shield them from accountability. Nowhere in the world would this be permissible. And we've seen the hypocrisy of the multilateral system of international cooperation when you compare to many other wars and the current war that's currently happening in Europe, in how, on the one hand, the very same member states did not use their veto powers to block aid to a particular country to support them. But the same member state can use the same veto power to actually block a ceasefire to prevent a genocide. And that level of hypocrisy is shameful. And the world leaders must carry the shame of this genocide. They must carry that shame. The rest of us are here to support and push and keep making sure that we demand the right thing to do. We demand the human rights of the Palestinians to be respected and their dignity to be respected. But the problem is one. Member states are treating human rights as if it's an a la carte menu. You pick and choose what you like and you discard what else you don't like. And yet human rights are indivisible. They are interconnected and they are foundational. And so we don't have any other choice but to fight ultimately for human rights to be the center of any analysis, but also any future that we imagine around Gaza.
You were quite apologetic to young people in Gaza, to the children, to those who are suffering these atrocities. And it hit hard because often as we report on all of this, we've been asking the question, so what's the point of the UN? What's the point and what can it do? Because as we watch, we're not seeing how impactful it can be and should be. And so one does understand the helplessness. From where you sit, as a representative representing us, the peoples of the world, and what's been, playing out, how do you feel personally working on this work?
You know, Pamelo, I don't think people know that being a UN Special Rapporteur is actually a voluntary job.
Yes, yeah.
So I don't get paid to do this work.
Yeah.
I do it because I'm committed to the human rights and to the right to health of everyone everywhere. And I have particular methods of work available to me within the UN to be able to say and do particular things with their own limitations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the High Commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the US Secretary General.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, the frustration comes when you have world leaders who should be displaying the level of rage and fury, and yet they don't. And everyone is happy to just hide behind this idea of quiet diplomacy. When people are dying, when children are dying, and those who survive have such life-changing and altering disabilities and disfigurements, there is no place for some quiet, soft diplomacy behind the scenes. And for me, I think that's what has been the biggest letdown. And I mean this with all of my heart. I'm very ashamed. I am very, very ashamed that I am this close and this proximal to such a big, big multilateral institutions and organizations and agencies. And yet, even with all of that, personally, I feel let down by my own leaders. And I feel that the world deserves much more than we are getting right now. And so my speaking to the children of Gaza was taking me back to my own core memory as a child growing up in Kwakwa in the Bantustan. If you remember, just at the time when Nelson Mandela's release was being announced, all of the trauma that happened with the killing of Chris Hani, all of the unrest that were happening in the townships and in the rural villages of South Africa, that I used to be a child that used to throw stones back at those Inyalas. And the Palestinian and those children in Gaza are the same children today doing the same thing. And they are being shot and bombed at. And I know that my life has been a series of perfectly aligned miracles, but to get the children of Congo, of Sudan, of Yemen, of Syria, of Gaza to have a life where they can thrive is going to take more than a series of miracles. And I feel completely let down and very ashamed. And I did apologize that with everything that I can do and say, I will keep doing it. But I know that it's not enough. I know it's not enough. But also giving up is also not an option when you have such a huge glaring vacuum in leadership in the global space, both in civil society, in academia, but definitely in the multilateral system.
Appreciate your time, Dr. Tlale Mofokeng, who is the UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights to Health.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.